Fear is a it's a powerful feeling, and it's interesting what it can do to people, especially when it takes hold in a group setting. People will throw logic out the window. People will do things that they normally would not even consider doing. People will believe things that they would not normally even consider believing. And this past week, we saw just a glimpse of that. Obviously, we had the terrible, horrible events down in South Texas connected with the hurricane and the subsequent flooding that happened in relationship to that. But following that, on Wednesday, maybe Thursday morning, a national gas chain communicated that they were going to they were not going to be able to provide gas to all of their stations. Just one gas chain said it. And what ensued from that was an incredible fear that we were suddenly out of gas. And if you drove around at all on Thursday, you saw things that hadn't happened since the mid-70s. There were lines down the road at gas stations that had gas. I mean, they weren't just in the parking lots. They were out on the street. You had to find your way around it. And it was just interesting how that fear, just one little chain saying, we're not going to supply gas to all of our stations, led to suddenly we're all out of gas and everybody's out there. And, you know, I'm glad to be on this side of that now that we've survived that great, terrible gas scare. I've ordered T-shirts for us all. I survived the great gas panic of Thursday, you know. Fear does this sort of thing to us. It takes hold of us. And it's not just in situations like that. It's in situations as we try and live our lives as believers. You know, we've been told, and I think it's accurate, that here in America we are now a post-Christian society. That's how we're now defined. That's how we're now identified in terms of our sociological makeup, in terms of our outlook, in terms of how we define terms and the priorities we have as a culture and as a community. And just hearing that phrase can cause us to become fearful. And there's been a lot of things that have come out through various means that relate to that fear. And Christians have sometimes taken stances and sometimes gone in directions that really don't reflect Christian ideals, Christian priorities. And it's important for us as we begin to deal with this world, this changing world and this changing circumstance, that we develop a mindset that allows us, that helps us to maintain a Christian witness, a Christian walk, not compromising, not sacrificing the truth, but one that also helps us or allows us to live with confidence and with peace about what it is that we're facing. And in order to address that this morning, I want us to turn to Psalm 46, and we're going to look at the issue of how to be fearless, because that is really what Psalm 46 is about. It's a song that Israel would sing that reflected its confidence in God and its ability to be the people of God as God had formed them and God had shaped them. It is very much centered on God's nature and God's character, and so that's where we'll be centered this morning. But I want us to understand that the one of the outcomes, one of the benefits of looking at God's nature and God's character is the peace and the power that it grants us. And so let's look at Psalm 46 and what it has to say this morning. It says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. Selah. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice and the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes war cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. Here you have this psalm that communicates some very important truths about God that we need to grow to know. Not just a mental knowledge, but an internal knowledge, a knowledge that shapes our very character, our very mindset. The first of these truths is that troubles are real, but God is easy to find. This is communicated to us in the first stanza, in the first section. God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in trouble. Now that sentence there, very present help in times of trouble, it's actually kind of an awkward Hebrew construction. It's awkward in how it reads in a lot of ways, because the word present there is actually a verb. And so in looking at and looking at what it's trying to say, literally it's probably better translated help. He is help that is very easy to find in times of trouble. You don't have to go looking for God in those difficult times. And that's kind of counter to how we operate and how we think so often, because when times come in, when struggles happen, when hardship besets us, the first question we ask is what? Where are you, God? Where's God in the midst of my hurt? Where's God in the midst of my struggle? Why am I having to go through this? Why am I dealing with this? God doesn't seem to be here. But Scripture says just the opposite. This passage tells us just the opposite of that truth, that in those times of trouble, in those times of difficulty, God is easy to find. God is there. He is present. He is involved. He's invested in our lives and in our circumstances. So when we face those times, when we encounter those situations and those difficulties, he's where we should be turning. But that's not often where we do turn, is it? My tendency is to go into analysis mode. Okay? I need to break this down. I need to look at the causes. I need to look at the possible solutions. I need to look at the resources that I have. You know, all the different elements, all the different perspectives, all the different resources that are available to me go through my mind, and I start trying to plan and to organize exactly how I'm going to respond and how I can operate. And sometimes that works very well. But there are times when you're going through situations like that where the resources aren't as evident. And then you start wondering, what on earth am I going to do? I don't have enough money, perhaps, to cover that bill, that new expense. The car broke down, and the mechanic says it's going to be $4,000 to repair, and I don't have $4,000 laying around, or some other situation comes, something surprising, something out of the blue comes into our life, and all of our analysis and all of our planning and all of our reliance on resources around us fail us. What do we do then? We do what we should have done from the beginning. We go to God. God, I don't have any place else to turn, so here I am on my knees. Here I am asking you for help. And he's there. He's very present help in our time of need. But you know what? That should have been where we began, not where we ended up when everything else failed. God is our resource. He's easy to find. He's there when things go wrong, when the earth gives way, and the mountains fall into the sea. Though the waters roar and foam, and the mountains tremble at its swelling. This whole image of the waters and its tempest and its struggles is exactly what we saw last week in the Gospels. Here were the disciples out in the boat, and the storm was coming up. The waves were threatening them. All those things were happening around them. And where was Jesus? He was at ease, asleep in the stern. Why? Because he knew his Father had this covered. And that's the mindset we need to develop. Not that we don't respond to difficulties, not that we don't see difficulties. Difficulties, troubles are real. We are not an Eastern religion that says, you know, pain is an illusion and hurt is something that you just imagine. That's not who Christians are. That's not our mindset. That's not what I'm calling you to. We need to acknowledge the reality of the hurt around us. But we need to see our God as bigger than that hurt, as bigger than our struggles. We need to see that He can take care of those things. He is our refuge and our strength. He's the place we hide, and He's the place that we walk through the situations with. That's who our God is. That's what He allows us to be. And this is highlighted even more as you move into the second stanza, where the psalmist tells us, reflects to us, that being on the inside makes a difference. In the second stanza, there's this great contrast that the psalmist is drawing for us. And the contrast is of that between those who are within the city of God, those who are dwelling in relationship to God and walking with Him, and those who are outside its walls. And it says that those who are within the city of God, what? They're glad. There's a peace. There's a joy. There's a security that's present there. Why? Because God's in the midst of them. And because God's in the midst of that city, God's in the midst of those people, she'll not be moved. And morning will come. The dawn will arise. But on the outside, the nations, they rage. They shake their fists in anger. They totter. They sway back and forth. There's no security there. There's no presence there. There's no sense of understanding there. And the image really here is of those who are with God and those who are opposed to God. God's power and His awesome ability is a great sense of peace to those whom He calls His child. If you are a son or a daughter of God, as Paul refers to us, then you can have confidence or strength in that place, in that position. But if you're not, it's a fearful situation. He speaks and the earth melts, the passage says here. I've shared before about my own dad. He was a person who could rage. He was a person who had a temper. But you know, in looking back at his temper and looking back at his capacity, if you will, to express that, I don't remember any occurrence ever where it played out toward us as his children. There were lots of times where he intervened for his children with that anger, with that wrath, if you will. Now, as children, we didn't always understand it that way. We didn't always see it that way. We didn't always understand that it was his protective mindset, his protective work that was going on there, that was involved there. We often, it caused fear for us too. But as an adult, And as I look back, thinking on it, it shouldn't have, because, as I said, it was toward the protection of his children, not toward their punishment, not toward their whatever in terms of his mindset. And I share that because I think a lot of times that's kind of how we relate to God. We see God act. We see God intervene, whether it's through scriptural stories or something in our lives around us, and it can cause us to be fearful. When you hear about the wrath of God, when you hear about the judgment of God, when you hear about the power of God, sometimes it can cause us as believers to be fearful. And the truth of the scripture is that it should be just the opposite. That his wrath, his power, his awesome abilities, whatever they may be, actually should be expressions of comfort to us, peace to us. Why? Because we're his children. He doesn't express those things to us in judgment, in wrath. He expresses those things to our enemies. And that should create some sense of peace here. That's what the writer of the Psalms, the Psalm here, is getting at when he talks about the difference between living within the city and being outside the walls. That should help us to develop a fearlessness rather than a fearfulness. In essence, it's God saying, don't worry, I'm here. Don't fret, I'm present. And it's in this truth that we see the last of the passage find expression. God's power and his presence allow us the capacity to be fearless. Now, I know a lot of people that hold Psalm 46:10 as their favorite verse. Be still and know that I'm God. It's been turned into a lot of songs, and different perspectives have been expressed concerning it and how it might apply in our situation. But there's a great capacity, to be honest, to misunderstand exactly what the psalmist is saying there. I've seen Bible studies, I've seen blogs, I've seen other, even some songs and so forth, read it, communicate it as if the word means to meditate on God, to calm yourself and to begin to meditate on who he is, begin to pray, to cease all activity, that you need to turn off all the outside events and just kind of internalize things and begin to pray and meditate on God's word or whatever it is. And there is some truth to that practice from a biblical perspective. In fact, it is found here in Psalm 46. It's just not found where you think it is. The idea of pausing and stopping and thinking about God is actually found in the word Selah throughout the psalm. That word Selah simply means stop and think on this. Pause and think about what you've just read, what you've just sung, what you've just experienced. Take some time to understand what God is saying through these passages. So there is some truth to that practice and that position, but that's not what Psalm 46:10 is getting at when it says be still, because the word be still here means to stop struggling. It's not stop all activity, it's stop struggling. A modern equivalent for us would be cut it out. Okay? You ever have your parents, your mom especially, say that to you? You know, you're arguing with your brother or sister or with somebody else or wrestling or whatever, and that's what they say, cut it out. Stop it. That's what this verse is saying. That's what the word be still in this particular context means. That's what the Hebrew word behind it means. It's not stop and meditate and focus. It's cut it out. Stop your worrying. Stop your struggling. Stop your fighting. Cease those types of activities. Abandon those types of behavior. And know that He's God. You see, the second part is what allows the first part to take place. As we deal with fearful circumstances around us, as we deal with these situations, verse 10 is not calling us to a contemplative, passive life, but to a very active step of faith. It's saying that God is so dependable, so amazing, so wonderful, that it's as though the danger has already passed, so stop fighting against it. Stop struggling against these things that cause you fear. Stop engaging them and simply know that He's God. And the word know there is just like the word know anyplace else in Scripture. It implies an intimacy, an internalization of that truth. What does knowing He is God mean in this context? Well, it means, first of all, He's great and above my understanding. God's big. And if you have ever come to the place in your life and in your circumstance where you think, I understand God, you're in trouble. That's right. Okay? The very definition of being God is that He's beyond us. Okay? Now, there are elements of who He is, His love, His compassion, those sorts of things. There's glimpses of Him that we can catch. But as Job says, those are just the fringes of His ways. Those are just the outskirts, the hems of His ways. He's so much bigger. And that should, again, not be a cause of concern for us because we are His children. That should be a cause of peace for us. He is beyond my understanding, which is good. Because if we're just operating off of what I understand or what I know or what I can conceive of, it's not going to get us very far. No matter how analytical you are, no matter how brilliant you may think you are, no matter what your IQ is or you know whatever it is that you have, your capacities are, they are limited. There are things you simply cannot accomplish on your own. Things you can't accomplish for others. And so there comes a time, and as I said, it should be our starting point, not our last resort. There comes a time in our life when we need to begin to live with the mindset and knowledge that I'm going to trust God with this. Although I can't see all the things that are going on here, and I can't see where this is going, and I may not understand why this is happening. It doesn't make sense to me when I look at these situations. I know God is big enough to handle it. He's bigger than me. Secondly, He is sovereign and perfect in how He deals with me. This is a knowledge of who He is that is essential to our walk. To simply believe and understand that He is great and beyond our understanding would be a fearful mindset if we didn't also understand that He loves us and that how He deals with us, how He directs us, is perfect for our lives. That His plans, though sometimes they involve going through hardships. As we talked about last week, when Jesus said, "Let us get in the boat and go to the other side," He knew that in that journey there would be a storm. Being the sovereign God, the all-knowing God that He is, He knew that in the midst of that journey to the other side, His disciples were going to deal with something very difficult, very hard. And so God, in directing us, sometimes leads us through very difficult situations. Very hard to accept circumstances. health issues for our loved ones, financial issues in our lives, natural disasters that we encounter. God's not surprised by any of them. He's not threatened by any of them. He is in control, and His way is perfect in how He directs me. As I submit to it and as I respond to it and as I live my life, I can do so knowing He is in control. Nothing escapes His notice. As I said, He sees it all. He knows it all. He's not surprised by any of it. Nothing is beyond His ability. Y'all remember perhaps the kids' song, "My God is so big, so strong and so mighty, there's nothing that my God can't do." Y'all know that song? Y'all don't know that song? Unbelievable. Y'all need to know that song, okay? I'll have Karen teach it to you because you don't want to hear me sing, okay? That's Karen's laughing in the back. It's a little children's song, but it expresses a truth that we all need to walk with and all need to understand. There is nothing that our God cannot do. Which, yes, it's a double negative, which means what? He can do it all. He can do it all. And to begin to internalize that truth is to begin to walk with fearlessness. Walking with fearlessness is not walking carelessly. It's not walking with disregard for your situation or the situations around you. Walking fearlessly is to understand that I'm in the hands of God, and no matter what I face, He's going to see us through. Jesus used the images of poison and snakes and scorpions. And we've taken that, so many Christians have taken that, and they've started doing what? Playing with snakes. You got those whole churches that's what they're about. And the preacher gets up there and he plays with the snake, and the snake bites him and he dies, and people are like, "Well, you didn't have enough faith." No, he didn't have enough sense. Okay? That's not the kind of thing that God's calling us to, this type of showiness. God's calling us to steadiness, to faithfulness, to fearlessness in terms of connecting with people. We get afraid sometimes. We get afraid when it comes time to share our faith. Some of us. Some of us don't have that problem. Some of us do. Doesn't feel natural or normal. And we start to let all our past thoughts, usually not experiences, but thoughts about what they're going to say to us and what they're going to do to us, keep us from sharing. George Patton was one of the greatest generals in U.S. history. And if you know anything about Patton, you know that he was considered fearless. But if you ask Patton, he would say, "That's not me at all." In fact, someone did ask him. He says, "No, I'm constantly, continuously afraid. When I'm in battle, when I'm leading men, when we're engaging the enemy, it's a fearful situation." But he said, this is what I learned. He said, "I learned very early in my life never to take counsel of my fears." That is, never to let my fears direct my behavior. Instead, to focus on my abilities, to focus on the people around me in military terms and the team that I'm in, those sorts of things. For the believer, we don't focus on those sorts of things. We focus on the God who is with us, our refuge and our strength, and easy to find help in times of trouble, who calls us to stop struggling and to start trusting. because He is God.